Hi, welcome to tonight's podcast. This is Brian at Behind the Indies, and I just wanted to say a quick thank you for tuning in. It really means a lot to us here at Behind the Indies. Kimberly and I both take a lot of pride in what we do, in finding some, really talented game developers to highlight on the website. And I know from the feedback that we've gotten that it really means a lot to, these indie folks that we get on the site. It really helps them out, and it also, exposes some really good games that people may not be aware of. We've got some cool stuff coming up on the website in the future here, so, please keep staying tuned. There is something you could do that would definitely help us out, is leave a review for us, wherever you happen to be listening to this podcast. We're available on anchor.fm/behindtheindies. Overcast is Behind the Indies. You can ask Siri to hear us, and we will be there. But it would definitely help us out if you could leave a review. Sometime coming up here pretty soon, we're going to be talking about some contests and giveaways. I'm talking to some friends of mine who are musicians who are going to do like a little theme song for us. But until that happens, welcome to tonight's podcast. All right, we are all set.
Perfect.
Excellent. So, I've actually been talking to some friends of mine who are going to try to do like a little like musical intro and
Oh,
stuff.
nice.
Yeah. So
That's great. You should totally do that.
yeah, so at some point we might do that, but until that happens, I'll just do a little intro here. This is well, actually, why don't you just introduce yourself? That's probably the easiest.
All right. So I'm Dan Adams. Online handle is Kamikaze. Lead developer behind Solo Warden and CEO of Polar Zenith.
Yeah, excellent. And I'm Brian from Behind the Indies, and thanks so much for doing this little follow-up, man. It's
Oh,
awesome.
for sure, Ben.
I mean, you guys have been doing other podcasts. I actually checked out your podcast from yesterday, and
Oh, right on.
yeah, it's great to see you guys getting some coverage because the game just kicks ass.
Oh hell yeah. We're still haven't had any luck with Kotaku or RPS yet, but hopefully this will reach out to many more listeners and hopefully then soon backers, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we should bring that up. You guys are on Kickstarter right now.
Yep.
You're about halfway through,
We're
right?
very close to halfway, and it hasn't even been 2 weeks yet. So we're pushing on strong. We're just trying to get out. We're trying to get the word out to as many people as possible.
Yeah, and I've been pretty like straightforward in my tweets, basically telling people like, please back this game so I get to play
Absolutely, absolutely, dude. One criticism that we've been getting quite a lot recently, actually, was a lot of people want to see more than just the videos. Of course, like with the stigma of Kickstarter video games, it's a lot of them have fallen short as to, any of the promises that were actually delivered versus, given. And I totally understand and appreciate that, and we knew that going in. And so we're actually looking at bringing out a demo for everybody, and this will be free for everybody. We're not going to have it through a paywall or a subscription or a backer wall. We're going to have this free for everybody to try out, and we're going to be announcing that actually very soon on everybody to be able to download this stuff. As soon as we get more of the red tape figured out, we're going to be producing that either mid or late during our campaign.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I think that will definitely give you guys a helping hand, give you guys a big push.
Absolutely. When
Yeah.
we were setting up the project, we were getting everything kind of sorted, and we had like a lot of features that were all in mind. So the demo itself is going to be cut down a lot from the campaign that we've shown off for like the cutscenes, because we want to improve on the cutscenes going forward into production. So we'll actually have more of a kind of, I guess you can imagine it as more of like a horde mode, where you have like the core loop gameplay of the incoming meteors and sort of a small bit of the procedural contracts that will show up from different countries, and you'll be able to play certain aspects of that, but not go fully in depth into the full campaign. And we'll have something set up so that we'll have like some sort of final score at the end, where people can like post their online score and try to top one another, and hopefully we can get you know, a community involved and seeing like who's actually the best in terms of actually being the most efficient at taking out the meteors coming into the planet.
Oh, nice. And is that, are you going to do co-op with the demo, or just a single player campaign?
No, we're going to be restricting it to single player.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, you just started talking...
So, with the cooperative experience, though, we're probably, for those who are really interested in doing the cooperative, I suggest you guys pledge at the alpha level. Because the alpha itself will also look to include the first stages of what we're doing for multiplayer as well.
Gotcha. So for those who haven't seen your Kickstarter campaign, I mean, you have a lot of levels. And by the way, congratulations on getting a warden in there. That's pretty awesome.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have somebody who wants to design a spaceship, actually.
Yeah, so that's that warden level includes designing a spaceship. The alpha level that you're talking about, is that the squadron commander?
No, actually, we have the elite pilot, which is a pledge level at $50. Which starts with the exclusive alpha access, but
gotcha.
The digital art book, and then also the other the previous perks of the previous backer levels.
Gotcha. Yep. So
and then of course an exclusive Kickstarter in-game will be provided elsewhere as well for the Icarus model.
Right. Excellent. So in this demo, I mean, you just touch, you know, briefly on you know, kind of the core rules. Is there going to be let me back up here. There's a lot of aspects to this game.
Oh yes.
You know, so when you say you're talking about the core rules, is there going to be diplomacy in effect in the demo?
The core gameplay that we want to focus around is make sure like people kind of understand and grasp the concept. Grasp the concept of telepresence. I'm tripping over my own tongue while I'm trying to say that. So the unique selling point, one of the main unique selling points of Solar Warden is that space shooter and real time strategy hybrid that we've been pushing so vehemently.
Yeah.
And we've been wanting to make sure that, you know, allowing players to either jump in and fly their ships as they want, or, you know, commanding the vessels, doing both, or trying to actually set up a game where they're actually doing just one or the other. We want to see how players fall out of that system. We would love to see it. We figured like this would be the best time to throw this out there to a wider, vaster audience and see what comes of it. And then that way it definitely helps us then help refine where our focus then needs to be. And then even with the demo as well, we're actually going to be releasing the demo in two stages, where we're going to be first doing, like I said, the core base concept. And then the second release of the demo would be an additional patch to the demo, is more of what you were talking about, the kind of diplomacy, where you have some additional missions, specific missions, where you actually are going to be dealing with like a mega meteor actually, and then flying a vessel down inside of it and then blowing it up from the inside.
Oh, nice. Nice. And the mega meteors are the ones that are like a ELE, like an extinction level
event. Extinction level event. You got it. Yeah.
Yep. Right on. Yeah, and so,
those have to be destroyed, otherwise Earth is toast and it's game over.
Yeah, and I mean, for those who you know haven't been following it or seeing it, you know, there's different sized meteors that come in, and a couple things that happen with the meteors is there can be, you know, baddies inside of it, but also the meteor fragments can actually have an impact on
yes.
gameplay.
Yes, exactly. So when you, after you've like, there's several stages of the meteors where you have like the intact asteroids themselves. But then when you're actually trying to bust them apart with conventional weaponry or lasers or missiles, whatever, then they fracture off into like their subsections, or we just call, well, the technical term we call for them is pieces. So the pieces that are left over, they're still intact and they can actually still fall into the atmosphere, but you have to completely pulverize each one of those pieces and they'll break apart into much, much smaller chunks. And those will eventually like fade into dust or burn up in the atmosphere, which are inconsequential at that point. And your radar will actually negate them from your scopes anyway, so you won't need to deal with the leftover individual tiny little pieces that'll burn up like, in the atmosphere fine.
Gotcha. Like clutter on your display.
Exactly. If you need to clean up like all the space dirt, I think that would turn into space janitor at that point.
Nice. So there's a couple things that specifically you wanted to talk about, and one that that we didn't get to talk about in our last interview because it's been a pretty new development, which is time dilation.
Yeah. So time dilation, if for those of your listeners who might have not seen, I've actually produced one of our development updates. It's on our YouTube channel as well. You can check it out. I think it's the development 3, if I'm not mistaken, where I specifically do a deep dive into, so the time dilation feature, which helps with the metagame of your campaign, specifically for when you have like a slow section of the game. Maybe you've, you know, done all of your setups and you're just waiting for time periods to elapse. So like you're building ships or you're performing research and currently there's nothing on your scope, so you don't need to deploy your fleet anywhere and you're comfortable in where you're kind of sitting at. We were missing right at that point what to do. So we figured, hey, you know, leaning on the kind of concept, especially the early XCOM Enemy Unknown or UFO Defense even, where they had the kind of time acceleration buttons.
Yeah.
You remember back in the like 1990s XCOM where you had like the 5 seconds, 1 minute, one hour, one day, and that kind of speed up. We wanted to lean on that. Take inspiration from that and pull it into our game as well. So in that way, we had a very similar kind of idea where we had any lulls in the campaign, you can actually accelerate time to be able to go forward and have certain things happen at a faster rate. And even then, also with fleet deployment too, we looked at with the moving around the ships and having it so that we have fleets being able to either choose to be solar specific positional locations, so not having a geosynchronous orbit. So you can have them line up so that it's like more oriented to the sun or on the backside of the planet at all times. Or you can have them actually set up to be geosynchronous orbit. So every time that you're actually like choosing that setup and then ordering your fleets to different locations around the planet, either geosync or otherwise, we wanted to be able to have a way for fleets to fly to those locations quickly without mag drive. Because what we wanted to have with mag drive as well is have a limited fuel source. So in that way, you have another thing to consider when you're deploying your vessels. If you're using mag drive too much, then that resource gets depleted. As well as when you're in combat, you cannot utilize time dilation at the same time. So what does that mean? That means that when combat occurs, you have to resolve it and you can't just speed up time and let that happen. You need to actually go through and clean up that either meteor cluster that you're engaging right now or anything subsequently with that So you can speed up time to move fleets to different locations without using mag drive, which is totally fine and how we kind of designed it. But if you felt like you were in a pinch and you were losing out on vessels like really, really quickly, you kind of underestimated your enemy or something, you can choose to use your other fleets that may be in standby on the opposite side of the planet and have them mag drive over to the other location. So that way, in real time, you have a fast method of transport to that other location.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And you touched on in you know, mag drive using up your resources. How do you replenish your resources in the game?
So we have right now, in terms of the mag drive, it's actually powered by a lot of the heavier elements, and the heavier elements you can either just purchase directly from the planet and have them be shipped up from the planet surface. But of course, everything coming from the surface of the planet or purchasing it from, like, you know, a sponsored state will be time consuming and expensive. So the best thing to go about with that is very similar to how, you know, either private space agencies or even, you know, like government space agencies have kind of prospected outer space and said, hey, there's actually a lot of heavy elements that are in these near Earth objects that are actually floating around near Earth's orbit. So maybe we could look at actually capturing them and mining them. And in Solar Warden, you'll actually be able to do that. And that'll be one major resource that you'll want to take advantage of right away. And also, certain countries will contract you to do that specifically. So you would actually capture an asteroid and then park it, like, in a location maybe above their country or over a location where it's away from their country, depending on whether or not they're worried about it falling into the atmosphere. And then they'll want a piece of the pie, right? They'll send up drones and whatnot. And maybe because of that, maybe rival countries, let's say you're doing this for China, maybe the states would want to get in on that action. You have to either allow that or deny that. And then depending on how you choose that action, we'll have a rollout and consequences to those as well. And then you'll end up making the other guy mad.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're talking a little bit about, like, you know, what people have, you know, kind of predicted. And I know in our last interview, we talked a little bit about, like, you know, conspiracy theories and.
Exactly.
But I mean, it seems like there's, you know, there's definitely a lot of sci-fi elements that you're drawing on this in this game that aren't necessarily so far in the future.
That was the entire point. Exactly. That was kind of the entire point, is to lean on the stuff that's been theorized and maybe just outside of our grasp right now, and also touching on the ideas of maybe this stuff actually isn't science fiction. Maybe this stuff already exists.
Yeah. And I mean, especially with, you know, like privatization of space and being able to launch satellites. It totally does. It seems like, you know, some of this stuff is really not that far off in the future. I don't know if we'll make it to 2070 without this stuff happening.
Well, it depends if we encounter, you know, a space-born alien race that is coming to destroy us. Yeah. We'll get to see, right?
Yeah, so can we talk about that a little bit, about, like, just your
sure,
kind of
definitely.
Background of your alien conspiracies about some of the motivation for this game?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so we had a whole we have a whole backstory already being written, actually, by myself and a few other writers in reference to this, and we lean heavily on a lot of the real conspiracy theories that have been around, you know, ever since, like, the 40s, 50s, 60s, and I even now, after some of the other podcasts that I've done, I've had a few other fans and a few other backers that have come to me sharing, like, new information about all this stuff, and I'm like, hey, this is awesome, all right, I'll look at incorporating these new things, like Trump's mention of, like, the Space Force and how that's all a part of the military industrial complex, and I'm like, oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see where that goes.
Uh-huh.
But kind of the, I guess, Reader's Digest version, I don't know if I just dated myself there, is thinking back onto the old, back in 1983, where we had the proposed Strategic Defense Initiative from Ronald Reagan.
Yeah,
I also known as Star Wars, the Star Wars program that everybody liked to call it. Was the idea of, like, you know, weaponizing space, putting up missile defense systems to protect the United States and NATO allies and whatever from nuclear threats. But kind of long story short with that is that same Strategic Defense Initiative developed, you know, a wide range of, like, weapon concepts, including, like, laser beams, particle beams, advanced missile-based weapons platforms, and researched all this stuff and how they would deploy all these things in various methods in outer space.
Yep.
But of course, with, you know, 1990s rolling around, the Clinton administration actually retired this program. But in the Solar Warden alternate reality of this is this actually turned into a black, like, officially it was retired, but unofficially it turned into a black ops project. And so they continued development over the years while deploying more and more prototypes and different vessels already in outer space. So they actually developed a secret space fleet. Now, in our reality, a lot of conspiracy theories think that this actually happened. So I'm taking the creative license to put that into actual fact and into the actual game lore. So in that way, we play on the idea of, like, these different conspiracies. Now, some of these conspiracies kind of go a little bit hog wild, where it talks about, you know, Nazi bases on the moon and Mars and further than that. But
wait, hey,
I don't
know
if I might.
What do you mean hog wild there? Hey.
Nazis on the dark side of the moon. Oh, I loved Iron Sky. Iron Sky, that movie was hilarious. But no, these are like more. A lot of people treat these things really, really seriously, and not like, okay, I don't mean to, like, bash anybody's, like, personal beliefs or anything like that, but it's some of these things, especially with pop culture nowadays, I don't want to paint myself into a corner where I'm actually proposing that as an idea. So I'm just kind of ignoring that and setting that to the side for now. But
yeah,
it still is a secret space fleet up in outer space. Sorry, go ahead.
No, well, I mean, you qualified it with saying that it's a Solar Warden alternate reality. So I think you're pretty safe.
There we go. But yeah, so as years go by, the Black Ops project eventually separates itself from any actual government agencies, and they develop their own system in outer space. But since they lack any sort of a resource or infrastructure in outer space to be able to, like, maintain a populace or maintain, like, new recruits or whatever, and they're still wanting to keep themselves secret and their technology a secret from the planet, they started trying to do their own thing until about the year 2070, when a whole mass of all these rogue meteors started actually getting bombarded into the inner solar system. And Earth was quickly trying to find, like, ways to actually set up a new defense force. So they rekindled the old Strategic Defense Initiative and renamed it the Earth Defense Initiative instead, and contacted the Solar Warden, the secret space fleet out in orbit, and in exchange for, you know, defense of the planet, they would actually provide resources and infrastructure while maintaining the secrecy of the Solar Warden project from the public.
Nice.
And that's the start of the game, really. That's how it all begins.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No, it's pretty cool. And again, it's I always have a little bit of a hard time in interviews in terms of, you know, assuming that people know stuff about the game already just because I've been following it.
No worries. But, well, I mean, like, I think you could preface by saying, like, if you haven't seen it already, check this out at this particular link or whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or even you can reference back to your old interview that we had as well, the one that we talked about in terms of different game mechanics and whatnot.
Yeah. So you were just saying that's kind of the beginning of the game. So in your like in your intro video, kind of the cinematic trailer for the game, where the you know there's the two folks standing on the asteroid, and that you know they're getting like weird readings. For people who don't know, like you're a small studio. I mean, this is a pretty massive project. You're four people, right?
Yep,
As
currently just
your
four people.
core studio.
Yeah.
And so, I
Well,
mean,
we're an international team too, actually, so we're not all in the same physical space as well.
yeah,
But
so even doing a cinematic trailer like that, like that's a huge undertaking.
If you know the right strings to pull and you have the right contacts, like several of the assets that I've used as well has all been from freelancers as well. So like the aliens themselves have come from really talented artist Roger Perez. Several of the astronauts have also been from freelance artists that I've contracted on. The voiceover talent was actually my wife did actually the she I guess I could label her as the casting director because she was actually or still is a member of the Screen Actors Guild or SAG. And she was also associated with the voiceover talent,
Oh, nice.
largely based in LA. And then also, that's a whole international crowd, too. So, we pooled from a various amount of different people that all came on board to help us out. And obviously, all were paid. And we made sure like all this came in at particular times. And like I said, in several of the other podcasts I've done, this is no. I guess I'm no stranger to this kind of like rigid production setup. Since I've done a lot of this stuff for 10 years in AAA business, having this kind of regimented production as we've kind of laid it all out, I mean, it's all the same kind of song and dance for us now. And then even my I guess in terms of more relevancy is in terms of having such high quality with such few amount of people can really be gleaned from my one of my pride projects, which was MechWarrior: Live in Legends. This is before I even went into the AAA business, making mechs walk in the CryEngine in multiplayer. I mean, there you go. So it was not just me, of course. It was me and several other people as well. We had a core team of about 10 people and hundreds of contributors for MechWarrior: Live in Legends, but it still came down to myself and a core of like 10 different people that worked like tirelessly because we are huge fans of like the MechWarrior universe, and we wanted to take that same passion and that same drive and do the same thing here with Solar Warden, improve especially to big publishing companies that. It doesn't take millions of dollars to make something that's unique, that's fun, that's polished, that is really well and can stand on its own against even some of the bigger AAA titles.
And I think your game looks like that.
Oh, thank you so much.
I mean, specifically something that I love to do is like customize stuff. You know, so you have loadouts for all of your ships. No, it's not like
Yes.
it's not like you're just customizing like your one ship that you're flying around. You can
Right,
actually
exactly.
customize your whole fleet. That's pretty amazing. So I have to ask, like, how load intensive do you think the final game is going to be?
In terms of performance wise, in terms of hard drive space, like that's a broad question.
I meant mostly in terms of performance wise, because it seems like you've got a lot of different processes going with tracking satellites and fleet command, and just
Certainly.
wondering if you
Well, a
had
lot
any
of
ideas about that.
the performance that we're building to now, actually, well, you can think of it this way. In terms of previous games that I've done before, Crisis, Rise, Son of Rome, even worked on, Star Citizen, a lot of those games have multiple elements where they're even dealing with like planetary locations of like locations on various different like forests and environments, where you have a bunch of different doodads of like different buildings and trees and foliage and all that stuff.
Yeah, weather and
exactly. But with Solar Warden primarily being in outer space, a lot of that stuff is actually kind of culled away. So the most expensive asset that is currently in game right now actually is the planet. The planet itself is made up of probably equivalent to like some of the buildings where you have like a giant texture sheet of everything related to the actual planet. The ships themselves are the hero assets themselves are still, you know, either depending on your LOD levels that you're set at, 2048 to 4096 style assets if you want the ultra high res versions, of course. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the current gaming rigs that you see most players playing now on, like, you know, a Core i7, 3 gigahertz or even less than that, probably like, you know, 2 gigahertz processor with 8 gigs of RAM will be more than enough to play Solar Warden.
Nice. Excellent. That's good to know.
NVIDIA coming out with their new awesome graphics card as well, hopefully driving the market down. Like right now, I'm running on I don't know if you consider these previous generations, depending on when you're listening to this. on this recording right now, I have two GTX 9970s.
Yep.
And this is running at peak performance, like 120 frames. Lowest performance I get is 80 frames per second with Solar Warden.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of this stuff, of course, there's still a lot to still go, especially in terms of dealing with, you know, fleet populations, alien populations, proper LOD of those assets. But, you know, we're not going to be as ridiculous with our, specs required, such as Crysis.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which is really load intensive. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. So kind of along those lines, what do you think, size wise, for the demo download might be?
So right now, the build that I'm running at with everything being baked down into the game is only 800 megs. We're going to be stripping out a lot of assets that are not actually being used in the game. And a lot of that stuff actually is for more cinematic stuff. So we're actually going to be stripping a fair few of that already. So I don't have the final numbers, so obviously don't quote me, but it should be obviously less than 800 megs. It actually should be probably around, my guess is 300 to 400, but that could change. So again, don't quote me on it. It'll be less than a gig, obviously.
Yeah, no, that's really pretty amazing, honestly. I mean,
thanks.
Yeah, no, that's really light, especially for, you know, for all the features that you have. Another thing I wanted to talk about, if people don't know it, is that you've actually incorporated the 6 degrees of movement into your screenshot mode.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool.
One thing I didn't actually include in, and one of my alpha testers pointed out to me, was we didn't have rolling on the camera, on the freeform camera. And I was like, oh no. I'll look at adding that in. So even then, yes. So in screenshot mode, you can pause combat at any time from just hitting the escape key. Go into screenshot mode. You can I'll set up like some quick like keybind commands for you guys. Mm-hmm. And also like a screenshot of like how to access these things. From screenshot mode, you'll be locked to like an orbit camera to start with, but if you press spacebar, then you can actually, you know, 6 degrees of freedom, look around at any location and angle that you want relative to the combat that's actually happening. So you don't actually have any locked positioning on any one asset. You can actually take a screenshot from any cool angle that you want.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, I have to say. And for people who don't know, I mean, if you say 6 degrees of freedom, if people don't know what it means, it doesn't necessarily make sense. But it's basically just being able to move around freely in space in the way that you would expect to be able to. It's not two dimensions or four dimensions. It's you have a full range of movement.
Yeah. So you can go up, down, left, strafe right, forward, back. But of course, you have rolls in 360 direction in all ways. So you have pitch, yaw, and roll all at your fingertips.
Yep. Yeah. So there is something I wanted to ask you about, and actually, I wonder if I could put a picture of this into the Discord so you can see. But
sure,
in
certainly.
Let's see if I can do that. In our last interview, I had I think it's like the second question in the interview. There's a picture of it's a picture of two spaceships like up front. The Earth is kind of in the back left, and you can kind of see like the city lights on the horizon. Then on the right hand side, there's like a smaller spaceship. Then a little bit further back to the right, it looks like it's a glowing cross.
Did you send me the link to what you're looking at?
Oh, oops. Hang on a sec.
If you give me a link to maybe the published interview, and I can see
what
you're talking
about.
Oh, yeah,
there we go. That's a good idea. Sorry, I'll edit out this dead air here.
That's all right.
Sorry, I've got too many windows open. Here we go.
Oh, I know exactly how you do.
Yeah.
running a podcast while trying to entertain at the same time and pulling specific references. Yeah. I did that with a worm podcast that we recently did, and that was like juggling and spinning plates all at the same time.
Well, yeah.
while trying to read and answer questions and listen to specific things that were all going on, it was difficult, but
it
worked
out
in the end.
No, it is. It's good. It's, and actually, when you asked me about,
there it goes.
Doing video.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, that cross, I know exactly what you're talking about, because you have, like, the two Corvettes, you have, like, the, well, I guess I'll describe them to you. The Hyperion looks kind of like a horseshoe. The one to the left of that looks like a kind of a big ship with big wings. That's the Helios.
Yep.
There's a smaller ship to the right of the Hyperion, which is actually the Icarus. It's kind of your standard fighter. And then that cross-looking object that you're talking about, that's actually Zenith Station, is what we're calling it.
Ah, okay. I wasn't sure if you did, like, if it was like a subliminal thing that you just kind of threw in there.
No. It's not meant to be any sort of religious artifact or anything like that.
Oh, man.
However, as I do say that, you know, we have a ridiculous backer pledge of 5,000 if somebody really wishes it. To be able to pledge at a general letter level, and we will actually build them a in-game space relic, which will actually be present in all versions of the game, and it'll be a space relic that is actually dedicated to that backer who decides to pledge at that level.
Nice. So actually, if I do want to have like a cross floating around in space,
if you're that willing for it, yeah, absolutely, we will definitely set you up with one.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's what I would choose to have floating around in space, honestly. But no, I didn't know, especially just because, you know, you had talked about different conspiracy things. I didn't know if it was like you threw that into the screenshot just to be like, hey, I wonder if someone's going to notice this.
No. No, that's actually the main space station that the Solar Warden actually first like starts out with. And that's kind of like your base of operations, where you as like the player himself is accessing like any of the command structure and then doing the telepresence from. So all the communications, it kind of like your, yeah, like a command center basically,
yeah,
is all of the communications need to feed back into that. So with telepresence, you have to have all of your communication satellites being able to be chained together in order to link back to the Zenith station or wherever you decide to actually deploy your like your command and control center from there, and you'd be able to actually control your fleet from those locations. Otherwise, you'll actually be like, you know, totally in the dark as to where everybody, like where your fleet is, if they're in like a dark zone. So for instance, if the aliens actually go and take out some of these communication satellites and you don't have line of sight to those communication satellites, you're going to be hosed in terms of being able to command them.
Gotcha.
They're going to be off on their own, and you'll need to make sure to maintain that that supply chain.
Nice. Awesome. And so you just talked about telepresence again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, have you tested that in like co-op mode with everyone in terms of people jumping around from ship to ship? How does that work?
Is it we have a little bit actually, and it works surprisingly well.
Nice.
I was surprised how easy it was to kind of like set up and test really quickly locally, and then I had a few of my testers actually come on and try it out. But of course, you know, there are bugs related to that, so we are hammering those out. How you can imagine it, if you will, if you've ever played either StarCraft or I'm not sure if Warcraft had this, but I know StarCraft had like a cooperative mode where you can both like start in the same spawning point, where you're both able to control all the units that are under that one banner, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So it works the exact same way, where you have everybody that has control of all of those same units that are under your control, and then are able to jump in and possess the actual ships that are actually over there. So we want to set it up for a cooperative where if, like, a seat, for example, for a fighter craft is obviously taken by a player, then of course you can't actually take control yourself because your buddy is actually in there. But of course, if there is, and I touch based on this a little bit, on some other podcasts where we're looking at also setting up multi-crewed vehicles, such as the Corvettes and even some of the bombers, where they will have, other seats available in that ship where you can actually take control of like, key equipment or key weapons, and then actually be able to utilize those cooperatively while somebody else is flying, or, you know, choose yourself to run the entire ship by yourself. But what that opens up is like an ability for somebody to like man the shields as well as the guns while somebody's actually piloting, and maybe they're dealing with sensors and so on and so forth. And how we're going to set it up is depending on like who is the controller of either the vessel or even the game, they can determine priorities of like who can get what. And that'll also be all sorted from like the server side. So the server is kind of almost like the dungeon master per se, where they handle like what the current state of the campaign is, and whether or not they want to actually allow people to jump in and pilot like certain vessels if they so choose. So it'd be like if I brought you into my game and I was very strict in terms of like, oh, I have my fleet set up specifically, but I'm going to unlock you to be able to go and take this either fighter or whatever, and I need you to go do that, then I can unlock that. But by default, we're probably going to leave that open completely. So then players can choose how they want to either restrict or not in terms of their cooperative campaign.
Yeah, that's a very interesting aspect, because actually, you could tie that into rewards in all sorts of ways in terms of, you know, diplomacy or resource rewards, or, you know, if you want to take this role, it has these rewards. If you want to take this role, it has these rewards. Mm-hmm. Like that could actually almost add kind of like a you know, like a role playing element to the game, which would be really interesting.
Certainly. Any of those people that love to actually do the RP and specifically assign like, you know, commander or captain roles, and then helmsman or a weapons officer, go on, so on and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be Sulu.
Or maybe an engineer. Maybe Scotty, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, Scotty. Yeah. Nice.
I can't give him more power, Captain.
I can't. There's nothing left. Cool. So I actually had to look up something that you said you wanted to talk about, which was Jonathan Marcus.
Yep.
I'm assuming you mean from BBC?
Oh, no, I didn't know
No.
that there was a Jonathan Marcus of BBC.
Oh, all
That's
right.
news to me. All right, I'm gonna have to look him up now. All right. No,
Okay,
Jonathan
so.
Marcus is a fictitious character that we're making up.
Ah, okay.
If you can imagine somebody, a hybrid of, let's say, Jesse Ventura meets Alex Jones. And those guys mixed into one created a baby called Jonathan Marcus.
Okay.
And Jonathan Marcus is a conspiracy nut. Actually, also let's throw in Art Bell in there too, because Art Bell is a heavy influence as well. He is a conspiracy theorist nut who started off his thing as maybe like a reporter, and then he left it left his like mainstream media in order to do his own kind of like internet podcast in fiction of Solar Warden. And he's actually hell-bent on he gets a hold of this information about the secret space fleet that's actually operating up in the skies, and then he starts this whole like kind of fake YouTube video or fake YouTube channel of how this is actually a real thing that's happening. So he's interjected in our story quite a bit, where he's hell-bent on actually disclosing the Solar Warden or uncovering the Solar Warden project, and actually trying to expose it to the rest of the public. And so you're
Nice.
in your campaign as well, you're going to have to actively look at like possibly ways of coercion of getting rid of said evidence in possibly any means necessary. You might have to eliminate some people, but by doing so, we'll leave bread crumbs for other conspiracy theories, and even Jonathan Marcus for him to pick up on and start tracking you down. So you got to be very aware, and this will happen in your campaign where there will eventually be the full exposure and disclosure of the secret space fleet, and that
Oh,
kind of
nice.
plays
So,
into the you go well go ahead.
no, I was just going to say, so he's like the dude who could blow your cover, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah,
So the idea
nice.
behind with the actual campaign is when the campaign first starts out, you have all of the countries funding at your disposal, and you get like a heavy amount of funding for all this stuff for all of your Black Ops projects very quickly. But however, unfortunately, because of the secretiveness of this of your space fleet and trying to maintain that level of secrecy in order to maintain your funds that are incoming, you are unable to access the brightest minds that are available to the human race, right? So your research will be stunted quite heavily at the start of the game until you progress further, and then eventually when you actually do have full disclosure of the project and it's actually totally revealed and the public then finds out about it, the first couple months are going to suck because there's going to be riots in the streets. They're going to figure out, oh my goodness, we're totally exposed to this alien race and it's bombarding the planet. We're not alone and government's been lying to us, so there's going to be riots and a whole bunch of cities. Your funding is probably going to be down to a fraction of
Right,
what it
gonna,
was,
yeah.
but quickly you'll be able to speed up your research processes because you'll be able to now have access to Earth's full research availability and contract out, any advanced research facilities in order to help you research any new crazy technologies that will help you in the end game.
Awesome. And how many? I just. Just curious. Let's say, like, in terms of doing research and loadouts and stuff like that, do you have any idea in terms of the final game, like how far the research could progress? Do you already have plans for like updates to the game of like further research and
So the actual like specifics of like what all technology we're still designing that out, but like you can imagine things as advanced as like wormhole technologies that you can see in several of my other previous videos. We have
Yeah, which looks pretty cool.
Linked into that, you can weaponize maybe those wormholes and create like singularities. So like black hole devices, for example.
Oh, nice.
Suck the aliens up into those. Advanced particle beams, all that kind of stuff. Advanced weapons platforms that'll be able to be deployed by you as well. But in terms of like going beyond that, one thing that we specifically wanted to restrict for ourselves was we've gotten a lot of questions of like, oh, is there going to be capital ships in the game? We restricted that to a no for a few reasons. One is in terms of the fiction, mankind hasn't gotten to that point yet where we can launch, you know, giant like cruise vessels in outer space yet. So we're not quite to that point. So we wanted to restrict it in terms of the time frame of Earth's first steps into the rest of the solar system, which would open up, you know, sequels to Solar Warden.
Yep.
And we would that's also bringing up to point number two is we wanted to be able to allow ourselves the ability to complete building the roster of ships that we're wanting to build without having to suck up a bunch of resources to create this massive like aircraft carrier like vessel tons of level of fidelity that would be required in order to build the thing. So we wanted to first stepstone our way in there, but like you were saying, open it up for maybe even future, you know, developments, and DLC of additional vessels such as capital ships is definitely on our radar.
Yep.
So we're definitely looking at adding that, but post release. Yeah. And maybe even a sequel to that as well.
Yeah.
And exploring the rest of the solar system.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good way to go. In terms of game design in general, I think even from, you know, even a board game or a card game, is to kind of stay focused on your core.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. One thing we learned from especially MechWarrior: Live and Legends is feature creep is something that needs to be considered.
Yeah.
Exactly. We don't want to develop too many features that we can't keep a grasp on.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Solar Warden, everything from, you know, telepresence with the RTS, the 6 degrees of freedom, you have time dilation, defense grid, all that stuff. That's a ton already for, you know, a little indie project. But hey, we're considering we made, you know, mechs in the CryEngine, we're up to the challenge and we want to see this game come to life.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I've been very straightforward telling people to support you. So I get to play.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
It's, your support is much appreciated.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's. It really is like stunning looking and just like right up my alley.
Perfect. I love to hear that. I also love being able to see players coming in from both sides of the genre or the genres, I should say. Where you have the space shooter players or space sim space junkie space game junkie kind of guys.
Yep.
And then you also have those that are more into the real time strategy element. So like the players that are very much like coming from Homeworld or Master of Orion or any of those games, right? Where they kind of come together in this single game and they're excited to see where it's going. Right. And it's great to see both kinds of players. Personally, I love playing both. So to me, this is a game that I would definitely back myself. I'm not just saying that like nobody developed a game that was very similar to like a Freelancer and a Homeworld before. And I decided to just be like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to make it myself.
Yeah. Yep. And that's good, because if you didn't love doing it, you probably wouldn't be doing it.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. So I have to ask, just for you know, other like indie people out there who are listening, you know, I mean, you've done a lot of stuff over your career, you know, kind of leading up to this. What would you say has been kind of like your biggest driving force, or your biggest, focus to kind of get you to where you are now?
Ooh, I think at first, before I went into the AAA business, I think it was a matter of, the passion, the drive of wanting to build games that I wanted to play, but I never saw anybody else actually build before, right? So very similar to, like, for instance, like with MechWarrior 11 Legends, tons of these MechWarrior games came out, and all you played was the mech. And the mechs are great. Mechs are awesome, big stomping, multi-story robots destroying everything. That's awesome. Everybody loves that. But BattleTech was a bigger thing than that. It was a ton of mixed arms where you had like tanks, planes, aerospace, you had VTOLs. Battle armor were a big thing too. Battle armor were all in the books, and they were a huge thing, especially for like when you talked about like the clanners and how they dealt with taking down mechs with, these small squads of individual battle armors that were coming in. And we were thinking, where is all this in a MechWarrior title, right? So with that as kind of like a first kind of instance, that was a big driving force, at least for me, is to and even then, when I was younger, I always found myself being like the dungeon master of like role-playing games ever since like either HeroQuest or even, you had Dungeons and Dragons. I always found myself being that kind of dungeon master to craft experiences for other people in order for them to enjoy, right?
Yep.
And that was always, oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I just have to ask in that vein. Do you remember Top Secret? When that came
Vaguely.
out, it was like an RPG thing. It was right around that time. Sorry, I just had to put it out there
Yeah,
again.
I vaguely remember. I don't think I've actually played it as much as either, HeroQuest or Dungeons and Dragons and in that
Yeah.
vein, right?
So sorry not to
No, it's fine.
interrupt.
It was but I guess now in terms of after the fact, or I guess the AAA business has its place, obviously, but to me, I felt like I was kind of getting burned out of it, where it was really hard to drive some ideas home to some of the creative directors that either, had too big of an ego on themselves, or had a very rigid way of looking at things. And a lot of the times they only looked at, some indie projects like Minecraft or fill in the blank, where those were hit titles, and then if those worked, then they would actually make that safe bet and then just rehash it and remake that same game design. My had heavy critiques on some of the games. I can't say anything specifically, obviously, with NDA, but heavy critiques with some of the games that I made in terms of some of their core combat, and saying like, hey, look at some of these other titles, and even some of the game designs that I felt like were better, didn't get their way involved. So I was just like, you know what, in spite of you guys, I'm gonna make it myself. So I was just like, you know what, I know I have the knowledge, I have the capability of doing this all my life, or a lot of it anyway, a lot of it myself, and a lot of the development for Solo Warden, probably 90% of the implementation of the features that you see in game have been done by myself. All the flight mechanics, the HUD implementation, any of the RTS elements, commanding of your ships, etc., time dilation, whatever, has all been done either in one, when I carved out some spare time, and now two, also taking indie to its logical extreme and doing this now full time and trying to actually prove this out, right? So I was like, I know I can do this, and I want to be able to do this, and I wanted to show this off to everybody that I could, in terms of like, hey, since making MechWarrior: Living Legends, I didn't want to just do it in spite of the AAA titles, but of course, with those titles obviously, betraying players, I felt like they're going in the wrong direction. Why are you creating these loot boxes when the game is just so stale?
Oh
And why are
God,
you
yeah.
creating these hollow experiences when clearly you can make it better gameplay, you know? Right. And that's the kind of thing that really, for me, is a frustrating part of, I guess, gamer culture, is that, you know, I guess in a lot of senses, we're led to believe that this is the only way possible. And I don't believe that at all. And especially nowadays, and this is kind of a mission statement, I guess, if you will, that I've kind of adopted, is now more than ever is the best time that indies can make games on their own with small groups of people. There's no need for these 100+ man teams to create well-crafted, wonderful, excellent experiences that are as high quality, arguably, or better, yeah, in some cases, than AAA titles, right?
Yeah.
Like, you've seen it all over the place. Like, Team Ninja was doing it with Sona's Sacrifice, right? And there was that other indie project that was actually done by that one fellow who actually had that viral video that went out. It was a Lost Soul Aside. You probably saw that.
Oh, yeah.
For, yep, Unreal Engine.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. See, if one guy can do that, imagine what, you know, 4 or 5 very dedicated, talented people can do. And even, you know, more so than that, especially with platforms like Unreal Engine. I'm sorry, I'm going off on kind of a tangent, but this is, to me, a very passionate subject for me. And this is kind of my driving principle, is I would love to see, I don't want to see the AAA, like I said, has a place, but I definitely believe that there is going to be a, I guess you could call maybe a revolution in terms of, yep, games that get created, where there is going to be, you know, either some people call it AA or III or whatever.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I just like to call them craft games, you know, like craft beers, right? Mm-hmm. So you have those craft games that are made by, you know, similar to microbreweries, right? Kind of taking this example to the extreme. But you have those wonderful, well-crafted games that are made by super, super talented people and don't have that same amount of overhead that you need to pay in terms of, like, especially a AAA title, right? And that's just it. I want to be in that category. I want to make awesome games, awesome titles, and go forward with that.
Yeah, well, you mentioned something that I've been thinking about myself, which is kind of, you know, this indie game revolution. You know, I've heard, you know, other people and either indie developers kind of talk about how the indie scene is dying out, or it's kind of on its last legs. And I think there's an interesting kind of almost a paradox going on. And really what it is competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, not long ago, like, if you were putting out an indie game, you know, people would kind of throw money at you just because it was like a cool thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were, mm-hmm, like, oh, dude, that's great, you're doing an indie game. But now, because of all the resources available, and because, uh-huh, it has become accessible, is now what's happening is there's competition in indie games. And what's happening is really good games are coming out of these indie studios. And it really is kind of this, like, indie game revolution where,
for sure,
where really good stuff is coming out of these, you know, small teams of people. And it's fantastic.
That's capitalism there. Right. So, I mean, you let the best rise to the top.
Yeah. And so, I don't think it's that they're fading away. I think it's more of a renaissance and a revolution, like you're saying.
Absolutely. And to, like, you know, with I love watching, you know, Jim Sterling, for example, just tear apart a lot of these really terrible, like, bottom of the bin, just asset flip nonsense, because, you know, they can, yeah, just create those on Steam. And it's just sad that all of these titles that just get thrown up on Steam every day, what is the count now? I don't know, several hundred per day. It's an insane amount of games that just get released on Steam every single day, and they're all just completely, like, washing out any of the saturating the market in terms of anything that's actually really viable in terms of quality, right? Yep. And it's difficult for players to really pick out the true good indie games until we actually get like more of I feel better coverage of more the better indie titles that are out there. Like even some of the ones that I see on Kickstarter now, I'll give a shout out to Doldman. Those guys are fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to see their game actually succeed.
Yep.
They're in their final week now, but they're not getting the exposure that they need as well, right? We're running into a similar problem where it's just that recycling of that same AAA aspect. You know, like if I can be frank here, if I have to see another nonsense article from either like Kotaku or any sort of game magazine website talking about either PUBG or Fortnite, like I love Unreal, but I'm done with Battle Royale. I don't care. There's other games and other genres more than Battle Royale. Please.
Yeah.
Come on.
No. No. How many times can you hide in a barn and shoot somebody and fucking jump on a roof? And, I mean, like, come on. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No, I
know
hear
where
you
the stories go, where the trend is at. And I understand that totally. But I mean, again, at least give some more exposure to different games that are out there, right? I don't know. It's just my opinion,
well, that's,
anyway.
I mean, that's honestly what I try to do. That's kind of my mission. I try to find cool indie games that, like, you know, should be looked into, man.
certainly. Yeah. As long as, you know, another indie game is not another survival horror of some kind, right? We have enough of those.
Oh, awesome. Well, Dan, it's been really good to catch up with you. I think we should probably wrap it up here. Is there anything that I missed that you want to talk about?
No, I think we're good, actually. I think the last thing I would say is, you know, obviously Solar Warden is on Kickstarter. You can find Solar Warden online as well, solarwardengame.com. We have, you know, a wide range of different backer levels for you to choose from. All the way for especially now, it would be the best time to pitch in for Solar Warden as well, since we have a Kickstarter specific backer level where you can actually pledge at the $25 level, which is cheaper than the full retail price of $30 is what we're going to be doing. So the time to get your access to Solar Warden is now. So check us out, solarwardengame.com.
Yeah. Nice. So you just stole my wrap up. I was going to do all that and do, like, you know, you're at Twitter, Solar Warden game.
Yes.
You're also Facebook/Solar Warden Game.
That's correct. Yeah, exactly. Find us on all the social medias.
Yeah. And I'm going to put this up on the website behind the indies with all those links. And
fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm probably going to repost the picture of the space station that looks like a cross in the background and try to get someone to pledge that on Kickstarter in my honor.
There you go. We'll get you a space monument.
Awesome. But Dan, yeah, thank you so much again for taking the time to talk to me, especially like while you have the Kickstarter going on. I know it's
absolutely
it's
my
a
pleasure.
Busy time.
And, yeah. 12, 14 hour days.
Yeah.
But it's worth it. It's totally worth it.
Yeah, awesome. I don't doubt it. And so I'm gonna wrap this up.
It's always hard to close these out, right?
I know. All right. So thanks for listening. I'm Brian from Behind the Indies, and we'll see you next time.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.